As our planet grapples with the devastating effects of climate change, the indispensable role of environmental journalism becomes increasingly apparent. Yet, the right to cover environmental issues remains under siege, particularly in Italy. How can journalists inform the public effectively when those exacerbating the crisis control the platforms? Today, we confront this question head-on. Welcome to another episode of the Media Freedom in Focus podcast. I'm your host, Beatrice Chioccioli, Advocacy Officer at the International Press Institute. Joining us are two remarkable guests, both Italian like me, and we will be discussing the challenges of reporting on climate change in our country. Barbara Trionzi, former Executive Director at IPI and current fellow, is the author of the report Climate and Environmental Journalism Under Fire, and brings extensive expertise on the topic to the table. Marta Frigerio is the editor-in-chief of Radar magazine, a media focusing on environmental issues that adheres to Greenpeace Italy's new initiative, Free Press for Climate. My first question today is for Barbara. So you recently led the publication of IPI report, Climate and Environmental Journalism Under Fire, which came out on February 13, if I'm correct. In the report, journalists from Italy said that many media outlets greatly limit their coverage of environmental subjects due to economic pressure. Can you elaborate on this a little bit?
Sure. Thank you so much, Bea, and thank you for having me today. So when we did the report, we interviewed over 40 journalists around the world, asking them about the challenges that they face in covering climate and environmental topics. And indeed, the issue of economic pressure came up a lot, not only in Italy, also in Italy, but also, you know, from South Asia to Southeast Asia to Latin America, different parts of the world. You know, news organizations tend to have close links either in terms of ownership or because of the advertisement they receive with companies which may be active also in the fossil fuel industry. In the case of Italy, in other countries as well, also, for example, the mining industry or real estate, in real estate projects which are environmentally damaging. So these companies will look for ways to put pressure on editors to limit environmental investigation that may hurt their economic interests. A typical approach with journalists in other countries have mentioned, I'm not sure if this is happening in Italy as well, but I could imagine that's the case as well, is for companies to contact the owners or the members of the board of a newspaper rather than the editors and put pressure on them. And the reason for this is that editors, so when confronted with these types of complaints, they tend to try and hold the line. They are familiar with investigations. They are familiar with the content of the articles that their journalists have been writing, and they hold the line. They do everything possible to not resort to censorship. But members of the board, directors, so maybe, you know, more of a distance to the content, and they're more, potentially more willing to protect the economic interest and so giving to these to these efforts to limit content. So they're more likely to give in to pressure. So this is actually a very effective way to limit. But the bottom line is, yes, a lot of newspapers, inevitably, especially mainstream newspapers, have links with companies that are active potentially in many fields, including in fields linked to the environment. So they don't want to see their interest hurt. And this generates a lot of pressure.
This is very interesting. Thank you for sharing. And Marta, on March 12th, so 1 month after the report Barbara was talking about was published, also Greenpeace Italy has published another report titled Why There Is No Press Freedom on the Climate Crisis, And it shows how in the last months of 2023, articles dedicated to the climate crisis in the main Italian newspapers decreased compared to the previous months, while advertisements from polluting companies reached the record levels. Also in the evening news, quote-unquote, influenced by the Meloni government's impact on RAI, the public broadcaster in Italy, according to Greenpeace, space for those opposing the ecological transition doubled. And even on Instagram, where a growing slice of the public are informing themselves, we all know climate information in Italy seems to be declining, and most of it is not coming from mainstream media outlets. So I was curious, Marta, about Radar. You have said that in the Italian media landscape, it was still missing an independent, ad-free, scientifically backed publication entirely devoted to environmental issues. So could you share your personal experience as an environmental journalist in Italy, working for Radar, and in previous experiences, including any notable challenges you've encountered in your work?
Yes, that's one of the reasons why we decided to found Radar magazine. We all have a strong experience in legacy media covering environmental and climate topics, but we realized there was a lack of independent coverage of the problem. Indeed, sometimes it's very hard to have reportage and articles published in traditional legacy media, and let alone the television channels. Because as Barbara was pointing out, there are so many overlapping interests. So when we try to dig deeper in the problem and we find connection between what's going on, the investors, the environmental problems, sometimes the conclusion, the reportage we produce, they are not very much welcomed in legacy media. And that's why we decided to launch Radar magazine, and we wanted to make it completely independent, and we wanted to make it free. We rely on our readers for spontaneous donation, so they help us to fund our investigation and our projects. And on the other end, we decided that we don't want to put advertising or paywalls, because we think that this kind of topics are very important and we want our readers to be informed. One of the problem and one of the challenge of the Italian media landscape is that a lot of online magazine and publication are relying a lot on paywalls. And heavy paywalls. So for long investigation, it's difficult to find a coverage and to find an audience. So that's why we decided to launch our magazine. And we are working cross-border with other several newsrooms all around Europe and the world, because we think that a topic such as climate change hasn't boundaries. So we want to give an international perspective.
Thank you very much for explaining a little bit more about how you work. I was interested, another question for you, Barbara, because in your report, you mentioned one of the challenges that journalists covering climate change in Italy experience often, which is online harassment. From climate change deniers and its effect on journalists' credibility. So could you explain how this phenomenon influences environmental journalism in Italy?
Sure. Yeah, indeed, many of the journalists we contacted also in Italy mentioned receiving a lot of attacks online, all sorts of, in particular, of course, so when their coverage challenges the what they call the big energy companies. These attacks seems to come from climate deniers, and in most cases, actually, they seem to be bots, those attacking, because they have no followers. However, there also seems to be a coordination behind. So the attack seems to be coordinated as if there was really an intentional effort to use online harassment to silence journalists. So what is the problem? On one hand, of course, this generates pressure on the individual journalists that who find themselves target of heavy online harassment campaigns, which can be really intimidating. We need also to consider that many environmental journalists are freelancers, so they work by themselves. They don't have the support of the newsroom, the typical peer support that is so important when you are under attack. But also they challenge the credibility, as you said, they challenge the credibility of the journalist, which is the most important value of any journalist. So even if a journalist is able to remain strong and keep on doing their job, the attacks, the online attacks, will influence the perception of the audiences. So this is really a major problem.
May I ask Marta, if you want to share if anything similar ever happened to you or anyone at Radar?
Yes, I guess we are under attack on two fronts. As Barbara was pointing out, the online harassment for journalists is increasing, especially on social media, but also from companies. Indeed, sometimes we have to deal with readers or online audience, I would say, and also the pressure for the companies, the investors, because sometimes when there are economical interests, such as investors, before releasing an investigation or project, you also receive a lot of pressure and control. So we are under attack on two fronts. Something like that happened, not to me, fortunately, but to a couple of colleagues I know. They were working on some projects, and they received, some kind of online harassment. Trolling. Also from a certain kind of politician. When we do ground report, when we work on topics involving local communities, sometimes we have pressure of local politicians. So yeah, that's not easy at all at the moment.
Disappointing, but not surprising, seeing the situation at the moment. And I was also thinking, Barbara, that environmental journalists in Italy, in the report you led, expressed concern also about the widespread use of lawsuits from politicians, mm-hmm. but from anyone, or the threats of lawsuits, which leads to a sort of self-censorship, both in terms of which subject you might want to cover, as well as how in-depth journalists want to cover them. So what measures, according to you, can journalists take to mitigate self-censorship in Italy today? That's a big question. I don't know if you have any ideas or tips.
Sure. Yeah, indeed, lawsuits, which very often also take the form of slaps, so strategic lawsuits against public participation, which are lawsuits aimed exclusively at silencing journalists without any foundation, you know, only aimed at silencing those journalists who do not have the resources to fight the lawsuit in court. This is the single biggest concern mentioned by journalists in Italy, indeed, and in many other countries. So what can journalists do? Well, first of all, we assume, and I do believe that's the case, that in Italy, the justice system is indeed independent and acts in respect of the rule of law. So many journalists just said, you know, fact check, keep records of interviews, make sure that you can prove the accuracy and in court. So it basically follow good journalistic and editorial practices to reduce the risk. And this includes also offering a right of reply to your to the individual mentioned in your report, in particular those that are subject of criticism or allegations or wrongdoings. And also, journalists said it's very important to take complaints seriously, not just dismiss them, but address the questions, correct the stories as needed on the basis of the complaints. So pursue all self-regulatory, if you want, accountability mechanisms that exist. So this is the foundation in order to be able to then, as I said, win the lawsuits in court. But the second problem is that for many journalists, it is difficult to even cover the costs of lawyers. So in particular, going back to what I mentioned before, that many environmental journalists are freelancers, so they will not be backed by a news organization covering the legal costs. So donors, in the report, also in the recommendation, it urges donors to support access to legal defense for environmental journalists, including by through the creation of pro bono legal support programs. The report refers to a program called Reporters Shield, which does exactly that, offers pro bono legal defense. And this is so important, in particular in the case of SLAPP suit, which if you have the resources to fight them in court, they are most likely to win them because they have they're groundless. So yeah, the recommendation is mostly to anybody who can offer pro bono legal support.
Totally. And I want to focus on something you said about, for example, offering the right of response to those that are mentioned in the articles. So Greenpeace analyzed the news related to the climate crisis from the five most widely circulated national newspapers. So we know them: Corriere della Sera, La Repubblica, Il Sole 24 Ore, Avvenire, and La Stampa. As well as in the evening news programs of Rai, Mediaset, and La Sette, and from the 20 most followed news outlets on Instagram. So that's a pretty complete coverage in the Greenpeace report. The NGO has updated the ranking of the main Italian newspapers evaluated using five parameters. So how much they talk about the climate crisis, if they mention fossil fuels as causes, how much voice polluting companies have. And this is very interesting because in the period that was analyzed, it seems like fossil fuel companies have had the biggest space in terms of mention, even though COP28 was happening at the time in Dubai. And so it would have been expected that politicians, institutions, or scientists and technicians would have had the biggest amount of mentions in climate change, in articles on climate change, right? And as well, how much space is given to their advertisements. I believe we're almost to one per day. And if the editorial boards are transparent regarding funding received from polluting companies. And guess what? Only Avvenire reaches a passing grade, according to Greenpeace. And the three main Italian newspapers all plummet down. So it's Sole 24 Ore, Repubblica, and Corriere all get a worse grade than before. So in light of this context, thinking about this data, I wanted to ask Marta if you can tell us more about initiatives like Stampa Libera per il Clima, so Free Press for Climate, or Voci per il Clima, Voices for the Climate, which are linked to Greenpeace and that you participate in, and how do these impact your day-to-day work at Radar, and also if you can suggest any other initiatives that you have in mind that journalists in Italy can engage with, or where the public can find reliable information about climate change issues.
Yes, these are two initiatives launched by Greenpeace last year. And they they want to provide the readers so trusted and independent sources. So they tried to together some experts in Voci Libere per il Clima, and they want them to network in order to give the reader access to good information. So not just journalists, but also activists, actors, sportsmen, everyone who wants to lend their voice for the climate topics. On the other hand, they try to set a program just for newsroom, and they want to create a repository of media, independent media and legacy media that do not receive funds from fossil fuels company or other kind of investors. Greenpeace told us that it was quite difficult, or more difficult to expect it, to create the first batch of the media and newsroom, because also magazine that seems to be independent relied a lot on this kind of advertising and funds. And perhaps they were not so clear in telling the readers that they were relying in this kind of advertising. On the other hand, Greenpeace pointed out that it was pretty difficult for them to stop receiving this kind of funding, because they represent a huge amount, a great part of their income, so they cannot cut them off. At the very beginning, there were just the 10 of us, so 10 newsroom, and now they are increasing a bit. They are adding new media company, and they would like to promote even more, because sometimes when we talk about climate change, climate crisis, we tend to focus just on the problem, and we tend to say that a certain kind of media, they do a bad coverage or a not complete coverage of the problem. But we never focus enough that there are also solutions, there are also best practice, and we can look for solution stories, constructive stories, that they do not shy away from the problem, but they show another perspective. So that's the aim behind the two initiatives from Greenpeace.
Thank you. This is actually leading to my next question. So I wanted to just point out that the only big player in the only big media for now part of the initiative is Il Fatto Quotidiano. And we hope that other media and other major players in the Italian media landscape are going to join. It's a fairly recent initiative. So we wanted to highlight it today, and we hope it's going to get some traction also in future months. But since you mentioned that Radar's newsroom uses a solution-driven approach, no, to tackle the problems it covers, can you explain a little bit more? Do you think, for example, that it's important to reduce this apocalypse narration in climate journalism? I know it's a debate for journalism that covers climate change, and maybe this is a question also for Barbara to wrap up. Whoever has an answer can chip in. Do you both think that climate journalism should focus more on exposing climate change denial, for instance, and dependency or attacks from fossil fuel companies?
I think that one of the problems in covering climate change is also the misuse of science, because as you were pointing out, in the media, there is a lot of coverage of denials and so on, but also a certain coverage of scientific topics. So when I'm talking about misuse of science, I'm referring to a certain perspective, a certain angles given to scientific topics. At Radar Magazine, we try to use the science as a primary source, but always with a very critical approach. So that's also why we want to focus on solution, because when we cover environmental topics, climate change topics, it may seem like we are talking about disasters, apocalypse. And we find out that this approach was actually driving away our readers. So we realized that with another approach to scientific coverage, we can engage more our readers, we can reach a broader audience. And we also want to highlight that there are solutions. We can have solutions right now, right here. Of course, we have to work hard and we have to look for solutions, but we don't want to focus just on problems, even though we don't want to shy away from complexity.
So do you agree, Barbara, with what Marta has said? Do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, sure. No, absolutely. Of course, I fully agree. And I think that solution journalism is in particular, it's particularly important in the environmental field because we see high levels of news avoidance, in particular on the topic of climate, because it gives anxiety to the audiences. So looking at solutions may be a way to keep the audiences interested. But however, one of the challenges that I heard from many journalists is that it's just very difficult because it requires a level of knowledge and level of understanding, not only of the problem, but also of the solutions in order to be able to cover them critically, because solution journalism doesn't mean to regurgitate any solution that is being proposed, but it means to analyze them, to criticize them, to be able to also offer readers and audiences a critical approach to the many solutions that are currently being proposed. So it's just it just requires a lot of knowledge and additional training for journalists, but definitely in principle it's definitely a direction that newsrooms should be going.
Thank you both so much for your insight and expertise. You have reminded us today that the fight for a sustainable future is linked to the pursuit of truth, and so I thank you both for being with us today. And I hope we get to talk more about this topic again in the future and see where we're at.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Media Freedom in Focus. For more in-depth episodes and reports on press freedom in Europe, search Media Freedom in Focus wherever you get your podcasts. Visit IPI's website to read Barbara Trionfi's report, Climate and Environmental Journalism Under Fire, and explore more MFRR monitoring and advocacy at mfrr.eu. Until next time.